Okay, real good. Yeah, it was our privilege to go on this trip. We went with Dr. Randall Price, who's an archaeologist, a Christian fellow. He's a dispensationalist. He would have a lot of similar views as us. So we were 35 people, on a, including his family, that were on the trip. And we, just for orientation, I thought I'd start with this first slide here. I'll use my pointer, this red thing here, which won't be able to be seen on the video, but you can see it here live. So this is a map here of modern, oops, make sure I'm not in anyone's way there, of modern, of the modern region, Turkey, and you can see Istanbul there. Here's Israel. And so this is the area we are in. This is the area of the seven churches of Revelation. And so here's a blow up of it on the right side. And that map is more from the time of John and Paul. And you can see that it was called, Istanbul was called Byzantium at the time. And so Izmir over here on the left side, where the arrow starts, is modern-day Smyrna here. So that gives you an orientation of how the map is. The John, here's Patmos. So here's where John wrote the book of Revelation. And the first few chapters were, or the seven churches part, chapters 2 and 3 of Revelation, were dictated by Christ. And Sir William Ramsay suggests that the letter probably got sent to the port of Ephesus, and then there it's written, the letter is written in a circular fashion. This is the order of the churches so that it's written to: Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamum, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. And so there, this was sort of like a mail delivery route in this sort of circular area during the Roman times. So so the seven churches are the cities of the, are generally World Heritage Sites now, and the island of Patmos is currently in Greece. Now we are going to do some scripture reading, so the book of Revelation will be in primarily, but I'll have to keep moving to try and get through this in a timely manner. If we don't have questions or anything, I should be able to get it all done in one session, but we'll see how it goes. No big deal. So the island of Patmos, I'll be focusing just on the seven churches, but the island of Patmos is, we'll have a couple of slides on that. And in around the Laodicea area, down over here, I'll have a couple of slides of Hierapolis, just to show you the orientation of some of the cities in the area there. So we'll start with Revelation 1. So this is John writing while he's on Patmos. I, John, your brother and fellow participant in the tribulation and kingdom and perseverance of Jesus, was on the island of Patmos because of the word of God and testimony of Jesus. I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day and heard behind me a loud voice like a sound of the trumpet saying, write on a scroll what you see and send it to the seven churches, to Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamum, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. And down to verse 17, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as a dead man, and he placed his right hand on me saying, do not be afraid, I am the first and the last, the living one. I was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. I have the keys to death and Hades. Therefore, write the things which you have seen, the things which are, and the things which will take place after these things. As for the mystery of the seven stars, which I you saw in my right hand, and the seven golden lampstands, the seven stars are the seven angels of the seven churches, the seven lampstands are the seven churches. So I do refer you to Pastor Stan's series on the seven churches of Revelation. It is on the church's YouTube site, Grace Baptist Church of Victoria, and he went into a lot of the theology of these seven churches. So I won't be primarily dealing with the theology today. I'll be just dealing with the sites and what's at them, what they look like today. And so this is the view of the island of Patmos from more or less where the cave was that John wrote the letter to the seven churches, or the whole book of Revelation. So this is looking sort of northeast. In the distance, you can see some islands in the far distance, and these are all the Greek islands of today, and it's a lot of the places that Paul would have traveled and some of the apostles as they went on their missionary journeys. And the Roman Emperor Domitian reigned from about 81 AD to 96 AD, and he exiled John to the island of Patmos. And there was a town below, the archaeology ruins of the town, but John did visit this cave. This is I lightened it up so you could see inside there. But basically, he seemed to either use it as a retreat or sometimes maybe stayed there sometimes, and this is where he met the risen Christ. Inside there on the left, of course, it's Greek Orthodox, so they have all their icons and things. But over on the right side, they left the cave the way it is. It seats maybe 20, 30 people. And again, that's a World Heritage Site as well. But I just wanted to show you that so that that's our jumping off point as we head to the first church, which is Ephesus. Ephesus I'll spend most of our time, or half our time on, because there's a lot of really interesting ruins there. This is, if you listen to Pastor Don's session on it on Wednesday nights on YouTube, this is the wording he called as the self-satisfied church. And so let's read this part about Ephesus, and then we'll just look at the archaeological ruins. To the angel, this is Christ speaking, so to the angel of the church of Ephesus write, the one who holds the seven stars in his right hand and the one who walks along the seven golden lampstands says this, I know your deeds and your labor and perseverance and that you cannot tolerate evil people. And you have put those who call themselves apostles to the test, and they are not. And you found them to be false, and you have perseverance and have endured on account of my name and have not become weary. But I have this against you, that you left your first love. Therefore, remember from where you have fallen and repent and do the deeds you did at first, or else I am coming to you and I will remove your lampstand from its place until you repent. But you do have this, that you hate the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which I also hate. The one who has the ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To the one who overcomes, I will grant to eat at the tree of life, from the tree of life, which is in the paradise of God. Again, I'll refer you to Pastor John's sessions on, you know, what the lampstand means and all that sort of thing. We just don't have time to do that. The Nicolaitans were, you can look at his session as well, but basically they were false teachers and false prophets, and they were somehow accepted in some of these churches, at least partly. So this is Ephesus. Now, I used this picture on the slide because in the far left up here, that is the library, the Celsus Library. And this is one of the main roads down to the marketplace, the library, the theater, amphitheater. And this road, if you were to turn and look the other way, is very far in extension the opposite direction. This basically runs east to west. In the far distance, it would have been the harbor, but it's all silted up. Sort of like a delta that's got reeds and things in it now. And so that was part of the demise, or the people moving away from Ephesus, was the harbor got further and further away. Ephesus was a major trade city in the province of Asia. Again, as Don has mentioned, Pastor John mentioned in his teaching, this isn't the continent of Asia, it's the region of Asia that the Romans called Asia. It was an important city for the early Christians, in which Paul lived around 52 to 54 AD. Surprising to me, the population was at that time between 200,000 and 300,000 people in the first century. It's quite a large city and very important. Of the seven cities, Ephesus and Smyrna were ancient Greek colonies. Pergamum and Sardis were old Antonolian cities, which was a couple thousand years B.C., and Laodicea, Philadelphia, and Thyatira were founded by kings. They were more modern. Now, although these were, that's what these cities are considered as founded by. They all had sort of townships and things prior to that, most of them anyway, but that's when they came to prominence or became cities. So the decline of the city started about 6th and 7th centuries AD, and then later the Arab invasions in about the 15th century made the city totally abandoned. That's why a lot of the ruins are so good here. It was basically an abandoned city. On either side of this walkway, or this was the road, but on either side you see all these pillars, and what they had a roof over them, and there were walkways, covered walkways on either side of the road. And then you can also see these stands. These are bases of sculptures were of prominent people in the city. And also on either side of this road, there were a lot of temples. There were temples to some of the emperors. There were not just the emperors, but they were pagan temples as well to some of the Greek gods, which Rome adopted. And so this is the city that Priscilla and Aquila met Apollos there and showed him the sort of true way, the believer's baptism. Tradition says it was the home of Timothy. Irenaeus writes in 1:8 that in about, or he wrote in about 180 AD that the apostle John lived there and that he returned after his release from Patmos. Again, this is tradition. It's not Bible, but it's quite possible. Nearby there was a Byzantine church. Later, there's now a Byzantine church, and supposedly the apostle John had been buried there. He lived till about 100 AD. It's a fascinating city. This is the this is the Library of Celsus. Now, this library wasn't built until 110 AD, and a member of Celsus, a former proconsul of the province of Asia, a friend of Trajan, but it contained about 1,200 scrolls, and it was the third largest city in ancient Greece next to Alexandria and Pergamum. On the right side of this picture, you see those two archways. That was the entrance to the Agora, or the marketplace. So Paul would have walked in and out there. He was there, don't forget, for probably 3 years. So this is where he would have been a tent maker and would have sold his wares. And so if you, so there's a street that goes, which way are we here? Oh, yes. So there's a street that goes this way. So if you keep walking this way and turn back and look, here's the marketplace. And a lot of this stuff is so, like it's just being unearthed in more recent years. And there's just so much more to be done. Like archaeology didn't become really important until the late 1800s, and now it requires funding and people and all that, and it depends what country they're in. You can see in the you can see from this picture there's the library, and then here's the walkway, and over my back right shoulder over this way is the amphitheater. So this is in ancient Turkey is the largest amphitheater in the area with a capacity of 24,000 people. You can see the entrances on either side, the right and left side. It's not totally rebuilt, but it's quite massive. Now, you recall the story in Ephesus with the Apostle Paul, and Ephesus was known for the worship of Artemis. So you'll recall this was where there was that big riot of Acts 19. So it's a tradition says Paul also preached a sermon at this theater, and they haven't, by the way, they haven't found the synagogue yet in Ephesus, but there was one there, and that's where Paul preached, and then he went and spoke at a house for a couple more years. So in the riot in Acts 19, you'll recall that the people who, the silversmiths, got all upset because Paul's teaching on God was affecting their business. They had made icons and of Artemis and little sort of silver personal shrines. The worship of Artemis was huge to Ephesus. It was their main god of the city. I'll show you a picture of the ruins of the Temple of Artemis. It was one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. And so when you had artisans' business being affected by Paul, in Acts 19, some of these people Paul was preaching to, I'll just quote here, but when they had become hardened and disobedient, speaking evil of the way before the people, the silversmith withdrew from them and took disciples away. Because Paul had taken disciples away from the silversmith, caused this big riot. And a major disturbance occurred in regard to the way, and a man named Demetrius, a silversmith, who made silver shrines of Artemis, was bringing considerable business to the craftsmen of the city. He gathered all these men, these workmen, and he says, "Men, you know that our prosperity depends upon this business. You see and hear that not only in Ephesus, but almost all of Asia, that's those seven churches, this Paul has persuaded and turned away a considerable number of people. Basically, it's costing us money." And Pastor Don had mentioned that most likely these seven churches in the area, either Paul had directly founded them, or people going out from Ephesus founded these seven churches, or six others besides that. Debbie has a question.
Okay, I
yes, yes. I hear some talking. Oh, yeah, good question. Yeah, so depending which Bible translation you have, so Diana is the Roman translation of Artemis, which is the Greek, same quote-unquote god. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, very good.
I had one other.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you said Timothy,
this was his story. Yeah, Timothy traditionally had lived there, yeah.
Right.
Born and raised in Lystra, but pastored in Ephesus. Timothy was born and raised in Lystra, but yeah, I know. Good, good. Oh, that's terrific, because I'm just talking, right? So anyway, this is the theater. All this I'm getting at in this part is that this is the theater where they gathered all the people and raged and said, "Great is Artemis of the Ephesians," or Diana, depending on the translation you have. And it said the city was filled with confusion, and they rushed together to the theater, this theater, dragging along Gaius and Aristarchus, Paul's Macedonian traveling companions, and the disciples wouldn't let Paul go there. So that is the theater. That is the place. That was the marketplace that Paul worked. And I just sort of get very interested in these sorts of things. Now, if you were to turn around and look the opposite behind me, this was the main road leading to the harbor. And the harbor would have been very close just on the other side of that mountain straight ahead or hill. But it's all silted up, as I said. This would have been the road, the exact road that Apollos walked, Priscilla and Aquila walked if they came in by ship from the harbor, or even otherwise probably. Luke would have been there because he would have been there with Paul, Timothy, probably John would have been there. And Mark Twain mentions Alexander the Great would have walked on this road, Hannibal, Antiochus, Brutus, Cassius, Pompey, Cicero, Augustus, Mark Antony. And when he was there in the late 1800s, it was just all abandoned and moss-covered. And he said that to think that in this abandoned place that there would have been this raging of great as Artemis of the Ephesians, he says, is in such solitude, he says, just makes me shudder, he says. So this is the now. This is in Ephesus. This is the ruins of the temple of Artemis, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. There's not much left there. I'll show you. The next slide will be. There's also a archaeology museum next to Ephesus, and it has a building model of the temple. But they had dug a lot of it up, but they covered it over as well. But there is a lone pillar standing of over 100 pillars this would have had. And in the distance there, I'll just point out on the, in here, this is the church, or they call it basilica, that there would have originally been where the Apostle John was supposedly buried. Lee! Well, this is in, Turkey, so I think everything's probably controlled by the government, and they said if they want to do any archaeology at all, you have to get a permit from the government. Now, some of the cities, like Pergamum, back in the late 1800s, the Ottomans, they gave permission to Germany, to a crew in Germany, to excavate Pergamum, and as a result, they took a whole bunch of artifacts back to Berlin. So. Oh, we never heard of anything being destroyed when we were there. There apparently was some destruction back in the 1500s and sometime later. Yeah, not so much since then. But you know what happens in places like this, we were told, is a lot of it's missing because, you know, this is 2,000 years old, so what happens is people take building materials away as it's fallen due to earthquakes or whatever, and they use it for other building construction, you know, so some of it's quite missing.
And there was a few slides back where you had, I can't remember the name of the road, but you mentioned there was all the pillars there, and there was sort of the base for the statues. Did any of those statues of people survive?
So that main road with the pillars, I think they have a number of them in the Ephesus Museum. Okay. So it has a lot of marble statues and artifacts, which don't have time to show a lot of them. Mostly it was like prominent citizens of the city, maybe people that contributed to the founding or the construction of the city, or you know, politics. So we're told anyway.
Right, and I know. Sorry,
that's good.
And I know there's a lot of like name references, mostly of like officials in the Roman Empire and stuff. Like,
yeah.
Did any of those people turn up as part of the, like, you know, little statues or whatever?
Well, I think they did, but I, you know, everything was so rushed, we couldn't sort of put that all together and figure out who the statue was and stuff. We only had limited time to go through the museum,
yeah,
for example.
Material.
Yeah, yeah. So here's a model of that temple of Artemis or Diana. So there are over 100 pillars. Now, if you were standing at the center of the front of the steps there, you could look straight down into the back end of sort of an open area, this area. And there was a massive statue of, at the time, Artemis there. It had been multicolored. So about 100 AD, or from 100 AD, they found a couple statues, not that big. These are about human size. There is supposedly the great god, if you'll believe it, Artemis. This is what people were worshiping. This is what they had, idols in their homes and icons and silver things. And, you know, to us it's unbelievable. It reminds me so much of what the pastor was teaching through in Corinthians and stuff, is just the immersion of Christianity is trying to survive in this culture of pagan deities and cultures. Here's another one. So these are from Ephesus. And, you know, some of the, Thyatira, some of the trades each had their own god, sort of like, so it would be, they would have, so you could think actually that you would have, they'd have a yearly party or monthly or whatever, and they would eat food sacrificed to their god that is the god of their trade that they've chosen for their trade. So imagine being a Christian and you're a laborer and you're in one of these trades and how, you know, you got to work your way around all this. It's really quite something. Now that this is from the 500s is a immersion baptismal tank, and this was up on the hill behind the Temple of Artemis. And oh yes, Dola. They worship those gods and goddesses. Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think now. I don't think so. No, no. So that would be.
So it's just they are just there for decoration.
Just for the history of it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Turkey is basically, I have a, I worked with a fellow who is from Turkey. He says, I said, oh, isn't everyone there, aren't they all Muslims? And he said, well, when you're born in Turkey, they stamp your birth certificate and it says Muslim. But he himself, Hakan is his name, he says, I'm nothing. He says, most people, it's mostly a secular society, although there are quite a few, there's quite a few influential Muslims, and the current government is looked on as sort of catering to more, you know, radical Muslim part, which some of the people don't like very much because under Ataturk, after the Ottomans, he made a sort of a secular society. So this is about from about 500 AD. Or so. It was rebuilt on an original church where that was where John was supposedly buried. And I'm just trying to find one thing in my notes here. I'm trying to remember here what Artemis was the god of. Artemis, oh, there it is. Artemis is the Greek god of, like you name it, wild animals, the hunt, childbirth, etc., etc. So in about that Temple of Artemis was the Goths had destroyed much of Ephesus in 268 A.D. And, okay, so now we will look at, I don't think we're going to get through it all. Now, Ephesus was the longest one. There was the most.
It doesn't look very deep.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. There's steps into it. I think this church was rebuilt on top of an original church from about 100 AD. So, we're assuming that this was where the original baptismal tank was. There are steps on either side. The idea is it's deep enough that you can be immersed in it. Though on each side of it, the tour guide said, we don't really know what these openings are for. And I have a picture of her standing in the other one. She was saying, is this where they stood to sort of immerse the person? They weren't really sure. It's where they kept the towels, Debbie says, yes. Could be. And in a different city, there is a baptismal immersion tank from the time of Constantine, from the early 300s. We won't get to that today, but next one we will. Now, that was the longest city we'll spend in, so things will go a little quicker. So we'll get through a couple more cities and then finish off in a week or two. Yes, Christy.
I can explain the riddle of the other thing.
Oh, you think you can explain the riddle? Okay.
It's a cross, and it's a stone of stumbling there. So people can trip over the other part. It's a cross.
Oh. It's a cross and it's a stone of stumbling. Yeah, yeah, it could be a cross, yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, this was in a separate room off to the side of the main sort of sanctuary. It was all out in the open, but originally, of course, there would have been a building. Okay, so we're on to Smyrna. Pastor Don's sub-text on this was, do not fear. So to the angel of the church of Smyrna, right, the first and last who is dead and has come to life says, I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich, and the slander by those who say they are Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan. Do not fear that you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you will be tested and you will have tribulation for 10 days. Be faithful unto death and I will give you the crown of life. The one who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. The one who overcomes will not be hurt by the second death. So this is Smyrna. Smyrna was about, is about 56 kilometers north of Ephesus. Alexander the Great had rebuilt this city. So he, you'll recall, he was in the early 300s BC. And the this city later became allied with Roman Empire in 195 BC. It was also a harbor city. The Aegean Sea is the sea that we're talking about harbors of. It's all out to the west of these cities. This Smyrna rivaled Pergamum and Ephesus in importance. Just like the other cities, it had multiple temples to the likes of Zeus and the emperors, Tiberius and Hadrian. Lee.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Those signs that are describing the area, do they make any, like, is there any biblical references?
No biblical references, because I would guess, because Turkey's a Muslim country.
Right.
There are certain things, like maybe mosaics and things like this would have references to Christianity. The word basilica, I've since read, was later sort of morphed into meaning a church, but basilica was basically a marketplace, the term basilica. So, you know, there might be the odd reference, but there's nothing that you would go there and say and see a Bible quote on, for example. More of a generic thing.
Okay.
And the reason I put this picture up, it's a little hard to see, but these are terracotta pipes here. And so, you know, from a city that's before the Common Era, that it had a lot of fresh water and it was still running actively when we were there. It was one of the, almost all, oh yeah, the other reason I use this picture is up on the top here. So almost all of these cities had an Acropolis, which is a fortified part of the city, and Acropolis translates from Greek into high city. They all had garrisons mostly, Thyatira particularly. So this building was part of the Agora, it was a commercial site for merchants and bankers and judicial structure. Smyrna had one of the largest grain markets in the area. The one side of this building had three stories, and underneath there were 55 niches and, 55 arches in four different sort of areas. There's fresh water there; it's still running, as I said. Now, interestingly, in one of the basements, you can see this what they call graffiti, and there's part of a boat graffitied in the wall. In the lower areas there. And our tour guide said, so there were Christians in this city at the time of Paul and John, and they used coded language to identify that they were there in the city, because, of course, sometimes the Romans were anti-Christian because they thought they were disturbing people. And so often, for example, so there's a series of words etched in, for example. Here's one of the graffiti things. Somebody wrote, I love a woman whose number is 731. How would your spouse like to refer to you as 731? Anthosia, I guess that adds up to. But so this was a little more common, you know, in the book of Revelation where it says the number of the Antichrist is 666. It's sort of along those lines. They were using these codes we're not really familiar with today. There is a way that they figured out, like, that means Anthosia. But there were other drawings of gladiators and boats. But I found that interesting. So this coding was part, maybe not, I guess maybe this guy didn't want to reveal who he was in love with, right? He's maybe chasing this girl. Hey, 731. This is part of the Agora again, so big marketplace. Now, Smyrna, back to our Bible, is this city, well, actually, it's post-Bible. Smyrna is the city that Polycarp was taught who was taught by John and was the bishop in the city, and Irenaeus was from. Polycarp was martyred for refusing to burn incense to Caesar. He was burned at the stake and then stabbed when the flame didn't consume him. So this is where the Christians were told in some eras at that time, depending on the Roman emperor, to take a pinch of incense to honor Caesar. And, you know, most wouldn't because they're honoring him as God, or at least as an elevated leader of some sort. So, see, the compromise was always sort of there. Oh, just give this pinch to Caesar. You won't get burned at the stake. Just compromise a bit, you know. And, you know, Polycarp, who was well-known and was well-known at the time, he refused to do it. And as Pastor Don said in his Bible studies on this on Wednesday nights, the root of the word for Smyrna is myrrh. So Smyrna was prominent in the trade of myrrh, which was used for embalming and was synonymous with the word death in that regard. So you recall what Christ wrote about Smyrna that we just read. It does use the word dead in there a couple of times. So there's a sort of interesting that some of these letters to the seven churches, Christ seems to be using something they can relate to when he's talking to them. So in this particular case, he's talking about death, and the city's known for its myrrh. In fact, that's what the name is based on. So like he said, the first and the last who is dead and has come to life. And another, a little further on, be faithful until death, and I will give you a crown of life. So it's quite interesting that we see this in another place, which I guess I'll have to get to maybe next week. We got a little bit of a later start today, but I knew I was going to run long on Ephesus. I think we can get the rest done in one more session. So I don't know if you want to should next. Yes, that's the end of Smyrna. Oh yes. So we have a couple of minutes. Any more questions, especially Smyrna, or we're all good? Okay. Betty. Right, the church building and grouping. In Ephesus, that church for the Apostle John was originally built around the time of his death in 100 AD or so. And it was up on the top of that hill. Now, it turns out when I'm reading Sir William Ramsay, these hills all have significance. It was known to be that church was known to be there even at the time of William Ramsay in the late 1800s or close to 1900. And so they sort of know where that was. But for the most part, actually, interesting question in the sense that when we get to one of the future churches, we'll actually see a house church. So there was in Laodicea, I believe it was, there was this large villa, well-off person that is dated from about 100 AD. And at some point, one of the rooms which is turned into a house church use, and they can tell by the apse and stuff in the front. And so a lot of these churches were underground. So they were hidden, or they would gather in somebody's house because they weren't allowed at some of the times, right? And it wasn't until Constantine, of course, in early 320s AD, that it was become acceptable to worship, and then we start seeing churches being built after that and more common. So in some of these cities like Smyrna, they haven't found the Greek synagogue yet, but they know one was there. Some of these cities like Thyatira, there was a big influx of Jewish people at the time of, after Alexander the Great died, the four kingdoms was divided up, four people, Seleucids, there we go, thank you. So I've got it in my notes, but it's pages ahead. So there was an influx in Seleucid the first or second, brought in a lot of Jews into the area, allowed freedom of travel, and there was some persecution in Israel at the time. And so it was the intertestamental period. So we know there were Jews. We know there were synagogues. And in some places like Ephesus, there was actually etching on some of the steps that had Jewish symbols. And in other places, there were etchings of Christian symbols that you wouldn't even know. There was one I didn't even know was a Christian symbol, but it's a circle with a pie in it, with six slices of a pie. And it means something that I can't remember today, but it was a Christian symbol to let other Christians know they were in the city, and so that they weren't alone and they could maybe find somewhere to worship or something. So thanks very much for your time. We've got a little long today. Ick, I knew it. And but we started a little late, Debbie. And and we'll continue it, I don't know, next week perhaps. Or yeah, next week we continue. I should be able to finish it off next week, because those are the main ones anyway, or the most to talk about, although they're all very interesting. So okay, thank you. And time for lunch, and then we'll have the afternoon service with Pastor Don.